Ms. Hardesty, I think you're on first.
Yes, I am. Thank you. Mayor, City Council members, for the record, I'm Joanne Hardesty, and while I am a member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, I think I will leave it to our co-chairs to speak at the next meeting. So I will be speaking for myself. I wanted to take us back a little ways because as I sit and listen to the 3 hours that I've been here of testimony, I realize that many of you haven't been involved in this as long as I have. And so I wanted to do a little bit of history. In 2000, I, along with many others, served on a committee at the request of then-Mayor Vere Katz. It was the task group to recommend a system of accountability for Portland police who were violating the rights of community members. The task group worked for months, and a majority of the committee recommended a truly independent oversight process that would have subpoena power and the ability to recommend discipline. As was the mayor's right, she chose to disregard those recommendations and requested that Gary Blackmer go back and create a system of accountability. That is what we have now, which is now known as the IPR, the Independent Police Review, except it's not independent, it doesn't review, and the public has no confidence in it. So you're being asked today to strengthen a system of accountability that the public has yet had no opportunity to weigh in on. Most of you may, Commissioner Fritz, may remember that when a Department of Settlement agreement came in front of the City Council, the public did not have any opportunity to weigh in. In fact, the day the City Council voted on it, there was a new draft that got handed to the community that day. And so we have departments and bureaus going off operating as if a settlement agreement is in place. What I understand is going to happen is that sometime next year we're going to go to court. The court's going to determine whether or not Portland police officers are violating the rights of community members. Then there will be a community fairness hearing. The community fairness hearing will finally give the community an opportunity to weigh in on the settlement agreement. And so why I appreciate some of the changes that are being proposed, I want to remind us we don't have a settlement agreement. It's not in place yet. And we're trying to change a system that the Department of Justice called Byzantine and a self-defeating system. If you make the changes that are being recommended today, you're only putting bows on a system that does not work for the community that it's supposed to work for. I think the only thing that we can do, the thing we must do, is to actually get the public involved. When a director comes out and says, these are my recommended changes, and we have a conversation, and they don't take any of your recommendations, they just say, no, these are the proposed changes I have. I think that that's not appropriate. I know I'm out of town, almost out of time, but I want to remind you that at a recent IPR meeting, Chief Reese came in uniform to talk about how great and wonderful an officer was who a community member, Mr. McCovey, had filed a complaint against. Mr. McCovey's experience is normal for an IPR process. They refused to take a complaint about racial profiling, yet the police officer said to him, are you her pimp? Is this a crack pipe? You live in public housing, so this must be so. So even the system that we have now refused to address that this was clearly a racial profiling situation. And when a police chief comes to a community review meeting in uniform to lull the police officer Tackett about what a great officer he is, and then he brings the criminal background of the community member who's complaining against Tackett, that is appalling, and it is appalling that he would use his power and his position to try to intimidate community members against filing complaints against the police. There's a good reason why the complaints are down. They're down because no one in the community believes that IPR or IAD or the police can effectively investigate the police. I'm done.
Joanne, I have to ask you a question on that. We did see that chart earlier, and it showed a decline.
Yes.
And that was, and we weren't given, we were given one explanation for that. You just said categorically, it's because people don't have confidence and trust in the system.
That is absolutely true.
How do we verify that? And I appreciate that you have contact with people, conversations, but for us, that's still at the level of anecdotal.
Well,
how do we quantify that more rigorously?
You should talk to people. There's a gentleman here that will testify, at least one or two people who've gone through the IPR system. You have a city employee, Jerry Williams, who said that she was going to come and testify when her time comes today, who has a real life experience. I think rather than believing what IPR says in their beautiful reports and what the police say in their beautiful reports, is you should be, as commissioners, talking to people who've had experiences trying to hold the police accountable. I've been doing it for over a decade, and I can tell you that not much has changed, except that we have less and less confidence today that the changes we make are really going to hold police accountable.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Dan? Mr. Mayor, I know the hour is late, but I was wondering if I may people, you have 5 minutes because of my background on this issue.
I think that's reasonable.
Thank you very much. So Mayor Hales, Commissioners Fish, Fritz Noah, Consultant Member Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and we urge you not to vote on these proposed changes to the IPR and Police Review Board. While many of the proposed ideas are good first steps, they do not go far enough to ensure thorough, independent, and transparent oversight of the police. The DOJ agreement is being used to push these changes, but they are being considered a ceiling rather than a floor. The changes only add power to the IPR professional staff while delaying changes that would strengthen the CRC, particularly paragraph 136 of the DOJ agreement that allows CRC to direct more investigation. IPR similarly pushed through changes in 2010 with virtually no public input, which led to the formation of the oversight group you heard about and that group's 41 recommendations, which have not been implemented at this time. Of greatest concern is this 180-day timeline. We're glad to see that the director is proposing a change. We had some proposed language around that, too, that would say IPR has to report to the appropriate authority, because that could be the DOJ, the COCL, the police commissioner, or the auditor, weekly, why the case is taking longer than 180 days until the investigation is complete. So that language is in our testimony. Furthermore, including CRC appeals in the 180-day timeline ignores the existing protocols that include 30 days for a complainant to file the appeal, as well as many as four hearings that might need to be held in that time frame. The other significant stakeholder-recommended change is language intended to allow IPR to compel PPB employees to testify directly to them without going through internal affairs. It remains to be seen whether that provision can be implemented without changing two paragraphs in the PPA contract. Again, you have those paragraphs in at least the references in my testimony. We don't want to see the provision, which is so important to make the IPR be actually independent after all these years, used as infrequently as some existing provisions. The current law designates City Council the final arbiter in appeals cases, yet only one appeal has ever been heard at Council. Also, since 2001, IPR has only ever invoked its right to conduct an independent investigation one time, that's earlier this year, in a case involving Captain Kruger and a female subordinate, but no community members. Meanwhile, many provisions, mostly from the stakeholder report, are absent. We wrote about the CRC's reasonable person standard of review to you previously, and it's a too deferential standard. It should be changed to preponderance of the evidence. Such a change will still leave the CRC's proposed finding a recommendation with two safeguards, the City Council decision and maybe the Chief's decision. It's disappointing that because the DOJ agreement locks in the limiting and confusing definition, we may be stuck with the standard for five more years. We do not see the provision. We previously didn't see the provision the director promised to make requiring the Bureau to tell IPR before they dropped the investigation, but the fact that he had to bring it to you as an amendment at the last minute that we couldn't see, and I called the auditor's office at 12:30 to ask if there were any amendments, shows that this is not ready to be voted on. We need more time to have a comprehensive plan that has community buy-in. There's also no provision to allow a person who wants to challenge the findings of a shooting or death in custody investigation to appeal to the CRC. While the DOJ agreement goes so far as to exclude the right to such an appeal, the city holds that such a person could sue, even though in reality that, A, takes a lot of resources, and, B, at best causes the city to pay out money, but not to discipline the officer. Only this administrative process can lead to that conclusion. The ordinance does provide for CRC members to rotate onto the Police Review Board hearings as required by DOJ. They will be rotating on as the second community member in use of force cases, but not on those cases with proposed sustained findings that lead to discipline. This is not necessarily a terrible idea, but it's not going to take all the steps necessary to integrate our oversight system, especially since, due to confidentiality, CRC won't be able to report back on what they hear, regardless of what kind of PRB they attend. The PRB will also remain closed to the public, the media, and even the person affected by the incident in question. We do support most of the changes being proposed, but they should not be implemented as written, nor implemented without addressing other longstanding community concerns. We support, in most cases with reservations noted, requiring the chief to explain when his discipline differs from the recommendation of the Police Review Board. That we agree that that explanation should be made public. Increasing the CRC to 11 members from 9, though there is some confusion about the quorum, again, creating a discipline guide. Investigating all uses of force with a subjective caveat they may not investigate if there's a clear, convincing evidence not to. This gives the IPR an out that's similar to their current ability to dismiss cases if they feel they are going to be unable to prove misconduct. Creating a template for the Police Review Board reports, which only includes about half the items that we recommended to IPR. We'd like to see more lists on the list. We appreciate the proposed public nature of the shootings and deaths reports. And we provided a list of other ideas that have been floating around, including the stakeholder report ideas. As you can see, there's far more work to be done to create a truly effective and trusted oversight system in Portland. Let's stop taking these half steps and take the time to make the IPR the best it can be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm
Debbie Iona, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League generally supports the proposed IPR code amendments. They reflect a number of the settlement agreement provisions related to the oversight system. However, the effort would have benefited from more community and CRC involvement. The League recommends that this process be slowed down so that the public's voice can be heard. In 2010, when significant modifications to the system were proposed with little public participation, a stakeholder committee was formed to explore community-supported improvements. The League was part of this committee that made 41 recommendations. Only a few have been implemented to date. The stakeholder committee, some of whom are here today, should be asked to revisit its recommendations and advise City Council on which to add to the code at this time. The League's priority changes are included in a written memo submitted earlier in the week. The proposed code changes include a requirement that administrative investigations be completed within 180 days. The League has concerns about the impact this will have on the appeals process. Complainants need time to decide whether or not they want to appeal. The CRC is required to read the case file in city offices during the workday. They convene on separate occasions for a case file review and an appeal hearing. Sometimes a conference hearing and a city council hearing are needed. 21 days is not enough. Furthermore, we need more clarity on how the union contract affects IPR's ability to compel officer testimony. In the event IPR is able to compel officer testimony, we hope it will use its authority to start conducting independent investigations of serious cases, such as use of force, shootings, deaths in custody, and illegal searches. With its expanded investigative team, the IPR should now investigate such cases of public import, as the stakeholder committee recommended. The oversight provided by CRC through the appeals process builds confidence in our system. There are several steps that should be taken to expand its authority. The right to request additional investigation, as stated in the settlement agreement, should be added to the code. CRC also needs the authority to reformulate or add allegations and to challenge IPR dismissals, such as the racial profiling allegation in Mr. McCorvey's case. Again, the stakeholder committee should be reconvened to examine these and other issues and recommend additional improvements to the IPR ordinance. A couple other things. In our observation, even though some appeals processes have gone on for months, the appellant, even though it doesn't go their way, and the CRC agrees with the Police Bureau findings, have expressed great gratitude and satisfaction with the fact that the CRC took the time to thoroughly look at their case. And then I just want to respond to Commissioner Fish's question about how do we know why people aren't filing complaints. And we've suggested in CRC work groups that the IPR think about contracting with some sort of a research firm to take a sampling of all people who have had contact with the police in the last year. And the IPR used to actually do satisfaction surveys of people who had used the system to find out how they felt about their experience. And we would like to see that happen again, too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, can I ask a question of this panel? First of all, I can't resist mentioning that I've talked to any number of police officers who are convinced that crime isn't down. It's just people don't report it anymore because they know that the police force is too thin to respond. So I guess nothing bad ever diminishes. People just stop reporting it.
Correct.
On the subject of the chief's explanation of discipline differing from the recommendation of the police review board, you just heard of the discussion where the chief was saying, well, that would be duplicative and the explanation would often contain information which can't be made public. The question I have for you is, even if it isn't made public, do you think it would be valuable to have the chief write down an explanation and for the police commissioner to review it, just because I think that sometimes writing things down and having to read them makes you sort of focus, and also because in that case, at least the police commissioner in future cases would be able to look back at the kind of mitigating circumstances he or she had considered in the past and at least have some internal consistency on what's considered appropriate mitigation.
Commissioner, I would just say that that's our problem right now with the Employee Relations Board. If there's no record that actually lays out clearly why you've taken each step, then we end up being overturned in appeal. It makes perfect sense, and it's perfectly logical that if you are deviating from whatever the norm would be in discipline, that there would be something in writing that would explain why that is.
And I'm saying that, I mean, even if the information isn't made public, do you think that would be internally helpful to the city if there was at least some written record that the mayor could look at and the mayor could then look at in future cases to see if we're being internally consistent?
I think Joanne just affirmed that she's saying that you would have the piece of paper there, and when the arbitrator comes and says what's going on, then it wouldn't necessarily be public, but it'd be part of the court record or, you know, the Employment Relations Board record. But I would urge you to think about what Commissioner Fish was saying about putting in categories where there could be a public record that says it due to health-related issues or due to personal family matters that we won't discuss here, that's why we changed this finding. Because then you're not violating the privacy and the community knows what happened. So I think that's an excellent proposal.
Yeah, and I the league would agree with that too, I think. And you know, putting things in the aggregate too as a summary, just so like at the end of the year you could see how many cases ended up, you know, at the discipline differed and kind of what generically what the reasons were, would be helpful to the public without violating the confidentiality.
Good. Thank you. Good question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next three, please.
The next three are Kristen Chambers, Becky Strauss, and Sally Joan, and they'll be followed by Brianna Swift, Floyd M. Convey, Jr., I believe it is, and M. Mio.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Yeah, good evening.
My name is Kristen Chambers, and I'm here on behalf of the National Lawyers Guild. The Lawyers Guild has been working for over 10 years to improve police oversight in Portland. Most recently, we have been involved in the case brought by the DOJ against the city. We are representing the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform, and we have enhanced amicus status in that case. We also coordinate with the law student chapter of the NLG to advocate for individuals who are going through the IPR complaint process. In general, we support the proposals that are made today for changes to the ordinance, and in particular, we are in favor of the power to compel officer testimony. We believe that's very important and crucial to an independent investigation. We share the same concerns with our community partners about the 180-day timeline, about it not being very feasible in both respects for the CRC to do an adequate investigation and for the NLG to provide adequate advocacy for the complainants. We also believe that these proposals do not go far enough, and we have five additional recommendations that we would like you to consider. Number one, allow the CRC to consider new evidence in reaching its decision. The CRC cannot make a well-reasoned decision if it can't consider all the evidence in front of it. Right now, if new evidence comes about, they have to send it back. This unnecessarily delays the review process and undermines their authority. Number two, the CRC should employ a preponderance of the evidence standard of review. The current reasonable person standard is confusing and inadequate, whereas the preponderance standard is practical, understandable, and it's used by many other police oversight entities. Number three, the CRC should have the power to direct further investigation or direct investigation of allegations that were not investigated initially. And this is best illustrated by an example that's in the first letter that I attached to our testimony today, which was a recent case in which IPR declined to investigate a disparate treatment allegation despite the CRC's request that it do so. Number four, the CRC and IPR should have independent counsel. We believe that having the city attorney have a role with the CRC, IPR, and in defending police officers against police misconduct allegations threatens the credibility of our police oversight system. And number five, the CRC should have power to hear appeals of PRB findings and in-custody deaths and officer-related deaths. Right now, these are reviewed by the Police Review Board at closed meetings. The second letter to attach to our testimony today talks about an example of a complainant who appealed an officer-related death to the CRC, and that was denied by IPR. We believe that deaths are the most serious incidents where there could be potential police misconduct, and for that reason, we feel they need the highest degree of oversight. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Good afternoon. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, Becky Strauss here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments today in support of the positive steps forward for the system of police oversight that we have here in Portland. I do want to add my thanks to IPR Director Sevier for his leadership on this work, bringing forward this proposal. And I think a lot of the discussion today really demonstrates a good show of faith on the part of IPR and really with your approval on the part of the city to take very seriously the DOJ agreement. And I would want to associate our comments with that of Dan Handelman with CopWatch. The DOJ agreement absolutely is the floor, but these are things we can and should be doing now to put these changes in to the city code. In regard to the proposal before you today, I just want to make a note that these changes are small improvements, but unfortunately fall far short of the comprehensive overhaul that our police accountability structure deserves. So while the changes before you should lead to a more transparent system, and we hope that they will, we will only get what we put in. And at this point, what we're putting in is piecemeal change within a structure that even the Department of Justice has said is self-defeating, and we've heard that that quote echoed many, many times over recent months. All that said, the ACLU very much does support the changes that are before you today. They will not result in systemic reform, but they will facilitate meaningful improvements to the existing structure, and so we support that work. A couple of the specific things that I wanted to be sure to mention have mostly been mentioned today and discussed, so I'm not going to really spend any time on them, but wanted to flag something that the chief mentioned in regard to the compelling testimony issue. The chief made mention of unintended consequences, I think he said, and I believe he was referencing Garrity and the kind of issue of those competing civil liberty interests when you have compelled testimony in that context. And it's my understanding of the Garrity rule that only compelled statements made in the face of a reasonable prospect of criminal prosecution are entitled to Garrity protection. And so I think while we should be mindful in these administrative investigations of misconduct that is out there, I believe that most often Garrity would not be implicated. And so we do support the change to the IPR ability to compel testimony. And then the second thing I wanted to mention, Disability Rights Oregon mentioned the discipline matrix. That's something that we and our stakeholder allies have been talking about for a very long time. We think it's a great idea. We have I'll remind you of some great reading material that stakeholders put together on September 27th of 2012. We did very comprehensive recommendations to DOJ at that point in regard to what the settlement should look like. And in part of that document, there are some details about what we think a discipline matrix looks like and some things that should be included in there. Of course, there are several things listed left on the table, including what Kristen mentioned in regard to the standard review. I hope that when we come back and do further changes, more specific to the CRC section of the process, that we'll look at changing the standard of review, as we've talked about several times over the years. So thank you very much, and appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mayor, if I just follow up on one question. Mm-hmm. Is it Garrity or Garrity? Garrity?
Garrity.
Garrity. So if you cannot compel someone, if you can't force someone to, in effect, waive their Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination, is it your understanding that if we were to go with this idea of being able to compel testimony, that the ultimate check is the right of the officer to assert that defense and refuse to answer the question if he or she reasonably believed that he or she might be subject to criminal prosecution? What's the check on someone being forced to give up a constitutional right?
I think the short answer is I don't know, and it's very complicated, so I don't feel comfortable maybe making an assertive statement about it. I think we've always looked at this as a confusing tension, because you have the rights of the defendant in this case, and then you have the interest in the public to understand what happened in the incident, and those things the public needs to know quickly, and they need to know clearly what's going on, but they also, the accused, the officer in this instance, has the right to that protection. I think some things that are employed to work around that are bifurcating the information that's available to certain parties at certain times, but I think I would probably defer to the district attorney's office for almost even on a case-by-case basis in terms of what's appropriate at what time.
I'm just sitting here being reminded of the time the United States Senate compelled Oliver North to give testimony, and it resulted in his conviction being overturned. And so this is a very important question of the balance, because if you don't get it right, then it can result in a constitutional deprivation. And I know you're not arguing that. I know you, of all people, would want us to get that line right. I guess it's something, Mayor, I'd like to know more about in terms of how we balance those rights under the current system, because I'm not even clear as I sit here how an officer would know whether they reasonably at this stage of this proceeding, whether they are subject to a criminal prosecution or not. There may be additional information that comes out. It's subject to the discretion of a DA or some other prosecutor. So I don't even know how you evaluate that. And I don't think we want to create a moot court situation every time someone's compelled and argue for weeks over people's rights, because we're at the same time trying to stick to a pretty aggressive timeline. So just something I'd like to know more about, maybe from our city attorney's office.
And if I could, Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fish, just respond briefly with a couple of thoughts to that. I mean, I think the first thing I would say is that as we've seen, even in the area of officer-involved shootings, the instances of criminal prosecution are extremely rare, and I don't have that number, but I think that plays into the analysis about, as you at counsel are balancing those civil liberties interests, the ultimate sacrifice, or kind of the consequence for those for the compelled testimony, is a sort of de facto immunity for the officer.
Well, that's what I was thinking, and should that be made? Who should make that judgment?
I think Commissioner Fish, I believe in some ways it's a policy decision for the council to be thinking about. We haven't settled as the ACLU on this discussion, but oftentimes we are inclined to go toward the public interest in having the information to compelling the officer's testimony, simply because on balance these are such high stakes investigations that the risk, should I say, of that officer getting immunity in some sort of hypothetical criminal investigation that we see very rarely is outweighed.
Thank you.
May I just, before the next testifier, ask Kristen and Becky, and then looking back to Jan and Dan and Debbie and others who have testified on behalf of organizations, would you be willing to participate in a stakeholder group, advisory group, if the mayor was to convene one again?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Sally Jockin. Good afternoon, or almost evening.
Thanks for hanging in there. You've been here a long time.
In 2010, I represented the organization Oregon Action as a member of the stakeholder committee. that was tasked with making positive recommendations for improvement to Portland police oversight and policies, as you know. I spent hours educating myself and attending meetings and even attended extra subcommittee meetings to help clarify language of our proposals for the larger group to discuss and approve. The 41 recommendations we ended up with were carefully thought out. Our goal was to create better policies and processes. But after the disappointment of almost all of the stakeholder recommendations being ignored, I decided to spend my time on other city and state issues. So you might think that I'm no longer qualified to testify on police matters. However, I definitely have not forgotten the main message that Portland needs strong independent review board that is community-driven and not dependent on the police bureau to conduct investigations. Several years before I moved to this city, I was already concerned about Portland police. In 2002, my son, daughter-in-law, and three of my grandchildren, one an infant, were pepper sprayed by a Portland police officer during a peaceful demonstration. The city of Portland was subsequently sued by them and several other protesters, but nothing happened to the officer who inappropriately sprayed them. I love my new city, and I don't want anyone to be unjustly treated by a police officer who is ill-trained or has wrong attitudes or is following a flawed policy, especially if a death is the result. If injustice does occur and someone wants to challenge it, the investigative process must come from the community. Although the IPR is supposed to be able to initiate and conduct investigations, I am concerned about whether they will indeed use their authority and investigate allegations thoroughly. I don't think City Council should approve changes that only partially accomplish goals without doing everything needed to improve the system. Otherwise, you will think that problems have been solved when they actually haven't been. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, next three, please.
The next three are Brianna Swift, Fred McCorvey, and M. Mayo. And they'll be followed by Christy Jameson, Joe Walsh, and Katie Braun.
Twice on my blog.
Did that right?
Good evening, commissioners and mayor. I'm Brianna Swift. I am a law student at Lewis and Clark. I'm with the NLG Portland NLG student chapter, and I help represent two citizens and their complaints to the CRC committee. I kind of wanted to talk about some issues that are more nuanced that haven't really been brought up from the position of the complainants when they go through the process and some lack of information that they get when they do it. For instance, in the first case that I helped with earlier this year, a woman, an African-American woman, 4'10", was stopped. And we didn't actually find out until the CRC meeting itself that they were actually looking for a Hispanic man that was 5'7". So the information that she got in her police finding said the suspect was similar to you in appearance only. I don't think that information itself is enough to give people the amount of information they need to decide if they want to go through an appeal. So I think that in addition to some of these considerations, we need to think about what type of information do we want to include in the findings so that people can have a meaningful opportunity to decide if they want to go through with the appeal at all. Also, in the case of Floyd McCorvey here, we didn't get information about discrepancies in testimony until the CRC meeting itself again. So this lack of information and lack of meaningful opportunity to debate whether you want to actually go through this process is not really being considered. So that's basically all I had to say in 20 seconds.
Thank you.
And we also agree with the preponderance of the evidence standard and the idea of an independent attorney there, because a lot of times these cases turn on legal principles, consent to search, exceeding the search. And sometimes the CRC members aren't fully aware of what those entail. And I think it'd be really good and instill a lot more confidence in the system if we had an independent attorney there.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Floyd McCorvey, and I'm a resident of Northwest Portland. And I'm a CDL truck driver, and I presently do work for the United States government. The day in question, the officer stopped me when I was talking to a young lady that I had met on the bus. She wasn't a young lady, but she was a nice lady. And when I crossed the street and she kept going, it behooved me that the officer could consider me, a 62-year-old, 300-pound man, a pimp. I don't even look the role of a pimp. The lady was dressed in a business suit. She had a bag on her arm. Her hair was neatly, and anyway, you could see that she wasn't a whore. Now, Officer Tackett come up to me as I got down the way, and his car was headed up a one-way street, 19th Avenue, which goes south. They came down a one-way street going north because there was no traffic. He stopped me. He said, "Who is that woman?" I said, "I just had a conversation with her." "No, she's your whore. You know who she is." I mean, the way he went about it was not procedure. He discriminated against me. He profiled me. And in question, when he searched me, he found my medical marijuana pipe. The reason I have a medical marijuana pipe is because I have prostate cancer. I did not want any Vicodins or no narcotics in my system because I had to adhere to the rules of the transportation board. Anyway, he considered because I had the pipe that I was a crackhead. And he told me, "Yeah, that's what happened. When you live in low-income housing, you understand me, we pay your rent. I don't want to see you up here no more. You better not come up here no more. You're not going to be pimping other people's mothers and daughters." I'm taken aback because no officer ever spoke to me like that. I have no quarrel with the Portland Police Department. Only quarrel I have is with these two officers. Tackett is the main one. He was doing all the talking with his hand on his gun, implicating that, you know, he's a bad guy, which had no effect on me, but this is what he was doing. Officer Green was the trainee. Now, if this is the way Officer Tackett is going to train Officer Green, you know, to be a Portland police officer, this would not suffice. Chief Reese, you know, he was perfidious in accusing me of being a criminal. It was 1996, 1999, it was 16 years ago, and he's going to tell everyone that I have a criminal record. These were adverse incidents that came my way that I had to deal with. As Ms. Brianna was saying, we never had a chance to refute or discuss what he brought up. He just decided to deem me a criminal to the Willamette Weekly and everybody else he knew. As she said about this young lady named Lisa, another officer done the same thing to her, blindsided her talking about her past. Why can't we talk about exactly what happened here and now, as CRC has done? CRC has extended me. They went out their way. They begged IRP, Independent Review Board, Portland Police Department, and IA to overturn this. But they didn't want to deal with racial profiling. For some reason, people do not want to hear about racial profiling. But it's happening. Everyone makes a mistake. I don't care how many accommodations that he has, he's still a human being. And they don't look at us as human beings. We looked at his statistics. Mr. Solomon said something about how can we address this. I am a member of the community. I'm on the Carroll, Oregon Membership Advisory Council. They just sent me down to Annapolis in April. I was down there. And I also go to Salem as a lightweight lobbyist to express what's going on and how to help people who need help. Mayor, I can't see in no way how that officer had have it within him to talk to me in the way he talked to me and think that that was okay. Now, Lieutenant Ford say he deemed it okay for that area. The people that live there don't invite the people that come in there and do their dirt. So it's not acceptable. I'm a human being. Every human being is due respect and dignity at all costs, okay? No one is exempt. I have given up 8 years of my life to volunteer in the Northwest area to help people when I'm not working. Portland Ministries, Northwest Portland Ministries, I was the only African-American there. They didn't look at me as being African-American. They looked at me with respect for the way I carry myself. And after a while, they hired me to help people who needed help. So it's just that one officer that I have a quorum with. I don't think the Portland Police Department is bad at all. I think they should make their stops. But it wasn't procedural.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very
much. So much for coming in and staying to testify.
Thank you.
Hi, can I stand?
You sure can.
Okay. I am here because...
Give us your name, though.
Oh, sure. Michael Mayo, M-E-O. And I am secretary of the Pacific Green Party Cascadia chapter here in this city. I'm here because about six times a year, somebody, some poor civilian, dies in the custody of this city's police. And that's not terrible. I used to live in Oakland. In Oakland, you didn't hear about six people dying in police custody a year. You saw it on television. They still do it. Every now and again in Oakland, some cop kills somebody in public, and you get it reruns on TV all the time. I'm much happier living in Portland. Only six people a year killed in police custody, approximately. Well, of course, over the course of the last 20 or 30 years, the crime rate has gone down all over the country, hasn't it? And gosh, there seems to be less crime here in Portland, which everyone, as they say, you know, failure is an orphan, but success has 1,000 fathers. So here, that declining crime rate sure has all these paternal claims on it. But the fact is that it's still around six. We didn't fire Fresh Hour. We didn't fire the guy who killed the guys who killed James Chase. We have not got accountability. It does not matter how many protocols and trainings you put in if you have no accountability. And that's why I'm here as a member of the public to tell you I don't really care what how you chop a human hair into 16 different pieces about the DOJ results. The fact is you don't have a system with accountability now. And you are the city fathers or the city council persons. You have the responsibility for putting in a system with police accountability. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next three are Christy Jameson, Joe Walsh, and Katie Braun. And they will be followed by Daryl Turner, Byron Parman, and David Denecki.
Like not all of them are here, so not all of them persevered, but go ahead, Mr. Walsh.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. You will never get control over your police department as long as the police department is involved in the independent investigations. You have to take IA completely out of the system. Do I think that's going to happen? No. However, it should be a goal. It may take a few years. It may take 10 years. But that should be the goal, that the group of people that investigate a police action, especially when someone dies, should have nothing to do with the police. They should look at it very objectively. As long as the IA is involved, as long as the chief of police is involved, as long as the commanders are involved, we're going to have this problem over and over again. I mean, I may not see it, but some of you will. You'll be here and you bear the fruits of these decisions. You are not ready to make a decision yet. You need to go back and do some more work. You heard from the ACLU, you heard from the Lawyers Guild, you heard from Dan. Take their advice. Back off. Sit down and say, okay, look, we had this organization that the Department of Justice has told us is screwed up. Use any terminology you want. But basically, it's screwed up. How do we fix it? And the only way you're going to fix it is get an organization outside of the police department to tell you what to do. And I'm not smart enough to tell you what to do with this police department. I would tell you if I thought I was right. But it is complicated. But as long as you have the chief of police making any of the final decisions, you're wasting your time and breath trying to reform it, trying to make it accountable. And just one added question. I used to be IBEW chief union steward at Long Beach Naval Shipyard, which was a federal sector. Now, when they investigated a federal worker, there was two lines that happened. One was administrative, one was criminal. You had to keep them separate. It's called the Weingarten decision. And when you say to an employee, you must answer the questions, it's under the administration part of it, not the criminal. He can invoke his Miranda rights under the criminal. He can also invoke his Miranda rights under the administration. However, if he does or she does, they can be fired. And I can get you that information if you want. It's called the Weingarten decision, and you're a lawyer, Novick, so I'm sure that you can find it. It's a very simple process that you have to keep the two investigations completely separate. So it's possible to do it if you want to do it.
Okay. Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Katie Braun, and I waited almost 4 hours to speak to you all today for 3 minutes.
Patience.
Even the director, Constantine, has left. He's no longer here today. He did say earlier today that there was a scathing report by the Department of Justice, and I've had personal experience with the independent police review, which even the director was calling Mary Beth still the director, and now Constantine's the director. There's big problems in the independent police review. I agree it needs to be independent. I also need a stakeholders committee oversight and a lot more research and a lot more done. So I came to this building, City Hall, on September 5th to volunteer to be interviewed to be a member of the Independent Police Review because of my bad experience with the Independent Police Review. I wanted to be on the committee to try to help change things. I'm a block watch captain, and I get emails from Terry Papineau. Terry Papineau is the police crime prevention coordinator for the East Precinct. I got her email to go to this building at 5:30 on September 5th to be interviewed. They had canceled that meeting. The Independent Police Review on September 5th held no interview for the Independent Police Review. There's a reason that I wanted to be on the Independent Police Review. As I've told City Council before, on December 5th, my ex-boyfriend came through my dog door, and I called 911. I had every faith in the police department that he would be arrested for breaking into my house, coming in my dog door, and he, in fact, told in the police report that he came in my dog door. I'm a block watch captain. I support crime prevention throughout the East Precinct that I live four blocks away from. The sergeant that came to my house did nothing for a guy that broke in my dog door and admitted it to the sergeant on my 911 call. So I walked over to East Precinct four blocks away. It was a Sunday and it was closed. So I took a shower, I calmed down, I was, quote, hysterical after a guy broke in and beat me up that I used to date. I go down to the main precinct and they say, fill out an independent police review form and leave. And if you don't leave, you'll be arrested from the main precinct. And I said, just please let me talk to anybody besides Sergeant Dave Galladay. He was not helpful at my house on my 911 call. It is Sunday, I'm at the main precinct, and I would like to talk to another officer to find out what is going on with a guy coming in through my dog door. So 6 months with the independent police review, and I get nowhere. I try to appeal the decision that went nowhere. It took way over 180 days. I got no changes or no feedback. Five people have quit the independent police review in this process this year, and we have a new director. And on top of that, the East Precinct has a new commander. So the change in this city is so great that I really recommend the City Council to take your time, do a stakeholders committee, let everybody that's testified, 22 people, be involved and make this city better, not only in the citizens' eyes that have lost complete respect for the police chief Reese, who doesn't think that inappropriate touching another female officer's thighs is sexual. We really need better oversight, and we really need time to make that better oversight effective. And it's up to y'all to do it. And I appreciate your time. And once again, a scathing Department of Justice report was very well written compared to what I would write about what I've experienced with the Portland Police and the Independent Police Review. And I hope to change it. I'm not giving up. I really will stay till 6 and later so that we can effectively fix the very broken system. And I think that there is a lot of community support if we just get, yes, a bigger committee on the Independent Police Review and actually make it independent of the police. And yes, written reports, so there's accountability down line. Dave Galladay, one more time, he was fired in Chicago, he's been demoted here, he's been re-promoted here, and I could read you Willamette Weekly articles about him. I could read you Oregonian articles about him. If Commissioner Nick Fish wants to know why there is lack of respect for the Independent Police Review or the police department, read the newspapers. Talk to your citizens. There is a huge problem with the Portland Independent Police Review and the police department. And why our director is not here right now, and it's not even 6 o'clock yet, it really worries me.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, we have a couple more people, I think.
Yes, we do. Daryl Turner, Byron Parman, and is David Denecki here?
Okay. Thank you.
And they'll be followed by Rochelle Silver, Jerry Williams, and Crystal Ilinski.
Is that all you have signed up? Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Turner.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for being here, and thank you for allowing us to be here. I'm Daryl Turner, the president of the Portland Police Association, and there are three key points I'd like to address regarding the IPR's proposed expansion of its powers in the disciplinary investigations. The first concerns are mandatory subjects of bargaining. The second concerns process, and the third concerns whether IPR's code changes make sense for the Portland Police Bureau. First, IPR's proposed code changes trigger a number of collective bargaining issues that must be addressed before the city can implement the code changes. The mandatory subjects of bargaining include, but are not limited to, discipline, job security, and minimum fairness. Our collective bargaining agreement also contains a number of provisions regarding the discipline process. IPR's proposed changes will also impact those contract rights. Second, in the past, the city has implemented new practices and procedures without first coming to an agreement with the PPA over mandatory subjects of bargaining. The city's approach has consistently resulted in unnecessary litigation and disagreement. Process is important. In its ordinance submission, IPR notes that it met with over 20 community groups regarding its code changes, yet IPR would not meet with the PPA to have an in-depth discussion over IPR's role in the discipline process. Time and time again, the PPA reached out to IPR to discuss these issues, and IPR has declined our invitations. Collective bargaining is a process of working together towards an agreement where both parties' interests are addressed. Until bargaining has taken place, these IPR code changes should not and legally cannot be implemented. This leads me to the third point. City Council should think long and hard whether these proposed IPR code changes are good policy for the Portland Police Bureau. As Chief Reese has pointed out, there are a number of cons in the proposed IPR code changes, which, in my view, far outweigh the pros. Currently, IPR has a very visible role in the disciplinary process. It has an unprecedented level of involvement and access in the Portland Police Bureau's affairs. IPR's proposed code changes would upset this delicate balance by empowering IPR to essentially take over Police Bureau duties and obligations in the discipline process. The Bureau's current Internal Affairs Division staff, who investigate alleged officer misconduct, are highly qualified, highly trained investigators with decades of experience in law enforcement and prior service as investigators. Currently, when civilian IPR staff wishes to question an officer, they appear alongside internal affairs investigators in one interview. This streamlined process is efficient and prevents delay in an already long, winding discipline process. Under IPR's proposed code changes, IPR would hold the unilateral right to conduct another investigation on top of the Bureau's own internal affairs investigation. A number of questions remain unanswered from this model. Why does IPR want to hold its own investigations? Why are we adding yet another layer to the already overly complex discipline process? how will the police bureau's use of IPR's investigation in a discipline process? Won't this additional investigation further delay the discipline process? If IPR believes the police bureau hasn't adequately considered IPR's investigation, what will happen? Discipline of employees is a core function of the chief of police and the police bureau. Isn't this a step towards civilianizing the investigative process and taking discipline out of the police bureau's hands? In conclusion, there are many more questions than answers with IPR's proposed code changes. I do not believe that these IPR code changes are a good policy for the police bureau and its discipline process. Even if you disagree with me about the policy point, we should agree to respect the collective bargaining rights of 900 men and women who serve and protect citizens of Portland and their communities, making it one of the safest and most livable cities in the nation. Thank you.
Thanks. You may already be planning to do this, but if you could get us copies of that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you.
And also, I will get you some ERB case rulings where in 1995, the Fire Bureau actually had a ruling in their favor on the discipline process, and it ruled in their favor that any change to the discipline process is a mandatory subject of bargaining.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, thank you for your time. In the spirit of this late hour, I'll keep my comments brief. As a labor
social, I'm sorry, record, Brian.
I'm Brian Parman. I'm the president of the Police Commanding Officers Association. And like the PPA, obviously, we share the same concerns as they relate to mandatory subject of bargaining. The members of the PPCOA believe in timely and thorough investigations that treat all of our members fairly. The PPCOA is committed to working collaboratively with the city to make effective and meaningful change in our discipline process, but we fundamentally believe that some of the changes that are proposed, those mandate discussions at the bargaining table. I think what all the testimony that's been heard by council today, you've heard from the police bureau, you've heard from the community, you've heard from the labor associations, everyone is encouraging this council to take their time and move deliberately and thoughtfully through this process of change, and I encourage you to do so. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon.
Good evening. Yes. I'm David Denneke. I'm a volunteer on the Citizens Review Committee. I'm speaking here on behalf of the Citizens Review Committee. I've been on the Review Committee for 2 years, and before that I was on the Police Discipline Board for about 6 years. So I've been in this process for quite a while. There are two issues that I'm really here to address tonight. One, I think, has already been addressed, and I don't want to beat it up anymore, but this 21-day rule, we need to look at that carefully because although we will do our best to hear appeals and dispose of them within that period of time, there are going to be circumstances where we can't do it. So there has to be some outlet, I believe, for us to take more time if circumstances require, and that happens with the administrative appeal advisor, if we don't have one handy, if witnesses can't attend, if officers involved can't attend, or the RU managers cannot attend, which has happened at times. So we can't always stay within the 21 days. And I think you already understand that from the discussion I've heard here today. The other issue, and the one which is of particular concern to us, is the standard of review. The the CRC is the only public forum for these disciplinary proceedings, and I feel, just from watching this process over the years, that the public is much more well informed. They're empowered. They want accountability, and they expect a process where the citizen review process is in fact independent from the police process. And currently, under the ordinance, which is 3.21020 sub S, that this is the provision which you heard earlier, supported by the evidence, that the a decision is supported by the evidence when a reasonable person could make the finding in light of the evidence provided. If the CRC is governed by this standard of review, that we have to affirm if the RU manager could have found whatever their finding was in light of the evidence, we feel that we are not truly independent. We should be calling balls and strikes, so to speak. We should not be deciding whether the umpire could have called it a strike or could have called it a ball. So we feel that we should be able to provide our own independent review of the decision that has been made. We're not the final arbiters of this process. The chief makes the ultimate decision, and then eventually the city council if it comes to that. So we feel that the whole process will be better off and the public's expectation will be met if we have truly a preponderance of the evidence standard which we're able to apply.
Mr. Denneke, I know it's late, but can I just follow up on that,
yeah.
Your comment?
Sure.
The last time we had a big discussion about